So, this is the, if you read the Generator post this afternoon, this is the penultimate talk of our, of our Impact series. As you can probably guess, the letter is C. Any ideas from that game? No, we're not going to make it that obvious, come on. I know you know. You can't say, Eric, because you know. Sorry? No, not compassion. Communicating is very close. Think about what was going on in those... Oh, bingo. Connecting is what we're looking at today. See, look at that. Connect four. The puns have started already. It's fine. No problem. So connecting is something that we do every day, isn't it? We go to school, we speak to people, we're connecting with them. Okay, I know for those of you who have finished your exams, it's something you don't do anymore when it's A2s. But for the rest of us mere mortals, it's something that we do every day. When we go to school, when we meet someone at the street, when we're at home, we're connecting with people, whether they're our friends, whether they're our family, whether they're a stranger on the street. I know you guys know what connecting means. But the question I want to ask you before we delve into this talk is, how is it that we actually connect with people? What are the ways in which we do this? Discuss. So probably into groups of four. I don't actually know how many there are. I take it from the random noises emanating from various corners of the room, you're done. I know exactly what that is. Put it down. I could see that from here, Ms. Notman. Okay. How are we getting on? Are we all done? Guys? You all done? You seem to be... Okay, cool. Right. So, how do we connect? What are the ways we connect? Hold on.
We talk to people.
Fantastic. Any others?
We like laugh about things.
Cool.
Facebook people and Snapchat people.
Emma?
Like our body language and facial expression can say a lot.
Cool. Awesome. Anybody else?
Trust.
Trust. So you can okay, yeah, I get where you're coming from. Yep, I'm with you. Anybody else got anything to add? Throwing yourself at people. Physically, yes, that's cool. I'm surprised there haven't been any jokes about, you know, trying to punch someone. Because that's how you connect. Anyway, cool. Alrighty. All the answers you gave were really good answers. And actually, they're a bit more in depth than we're going to go into tonight. So we're taking a real broad brushstroke approach to connecting with people tonight. And so what this talk is all about, it's going to be really practical. I'm not going to be spouting lots of stuff at you, sort of really theoretical, but it's going to be getting down to the real nitty-gritty of how we can practically connect with people and have a real impact on their lives. So what I'm going to do tonight is present you with a biblical model that we see Jesus use on how to do this, and then give you some practical advice as well. Cool. So there are two main ways we connect, and you guys picked up on things that we use these for, but not the actual really broad things. I didn't expect you to, because they're so broad that you'd probably miss them because they're that obvious. So the first one is words. That's how broad we're going. Words. Okay. So obviously, as you know, words are the way in which we convey ideas and information to other people. For the Snapchatting example, the Facebooking example, obviously we're typing the words out onto the posts. When we're talking, like I'm doing now, we're using words to convey the information. In fact, we have a prime example of how to communicate in the Bible. Jesus is an absolute master of this. It's not a surprise, really. He is the Word. No? Okay, fine. Lame Sam attempted a joke, but there we go. So, when we read through the New Testament, we're given plenty of examples of where Jesus actually powerfully connects with people through the words that he shares. And the example I really want to draw on tonight is that of the woman at the well. Bingo. Thank you very much. There we go. We can all enjoy that picture up there. That's a bit more pixelated than I hoped it would be, but there we go. Okay. So, I'm sure you guys all know the story, don't you? Like, Jesus is at the well. His disciples have gone to town to buy food. Woman strolls up in the middle of the day. And Jesus starts talking to her, get into a conversation. She becomes a believer. She runs into town, tells everybody about him. That's roughly the story, isn't it? Okay. So what's really surprising about this is that Jesus doesn't see her and then launch into a dramatic sermon about how she needs him as her savior, how she is going to hell and needs to repent. Actually, all he does is ask her for a drink of water. That's pretty ordinary, isn't it? Like, it's not something radical. It's not something completely out of the ordinary for a guy at a well who doesn't have a bucket on him to ask someone who comes to the well with a bucket to get them a drink. Like, a lot of people will read a lot into the situation here, and they're not wrong to, that Jesus is sort of breaking down cultural stereotypes, because as a rabbi, they don't speak to women, let alone Samaritan women who aren't Jews. But that's not the point that we're grasping hold of tonight. Actually, what we're looking at is the way that Jesus begins this encounter. We've got to remember that this is actually an encounter with a stranger as well. The first thing he says to her is something really casual. It's something that's not surprising at all. But yet, as we work through the passage, we actually see this conversation blossom into something that's about salvation. So Jesus then goes on to talk about living water. He reveals something deeply personal about the woman's life that he knows from divine revelation. And then she goes off, after having hearing this and accepted that he's the Messiah, to tell her whole town that this is the case. Now, obviously, there's a lot to draw from here, and it's an amazing example of how we should kind of communicate to people. But the first point I want to make is that Jesus actually does this entirely in an afternoon. I'm not expecting any of you guys to go out, have a conversation with a stranger, and, you know, by mid-afternoon, they've suddenly become a Christian. That'd be amazing. But I think more often than not, our encounters don't work like that in the real world. Sometimes the Holy Spirit moves powerfully, and things like that do happen. But for the most part, our encounters and engagements with people in the real world will be a very gradual process. But we can still apply these steps. Firstly, as I said already, he engages her in casual conversation. Actually, before you get onto the real meat and potatoes stuff with people, you need to start really small. You need to be sort of going, hey, how are you? And get to know someone, build up a relationship first. Then you can sort of drop in the fact that actually, yeah, I'm a Christian, which Jesus does early on by talking about if you knew the gift of God, which kind of implies that he knows the gift because she doesn't. Otherwise, how can you talk about something with any authority if you don't know about it? Then he goes on to sort of talk about the gospel and sort of mentions living water and then latches on to sort of something that he's learned about the person and uses that to explain why they need the gospel, why they need Jesus. And in fact, you know, this isn't an instant success method. This isn't something that guarantees that every person you speak to will be a Christian, you'll be a super evangelist and, you know, God's going to greet you at heaven's gates and go, well done, you got X number of people into heaven, that was amazing. Because in fact, even everyone that Jesus spoke to didn't become a Christian. This isn't a guaranteed success. But actually what it does give us is a really useful way of showing who we are and being authentic in what we're sharing. I know personally I've had a few experiences where I haven't always applied this method, but I've applied sort of similar steps and it's led to some amazing conversations. They haven't become Christians then and there, but it's meant we've had a really positive encounter. So there was one time at university this year, actually no, it was last year, it was 2014, December, but this academic year, where I went back to Guildford and helped out with a text-a-toasty event. Now, I'm sure some of you can probably work out what a text-a-toasty event is. It's where a group of people, the CU normally, sort of set up a mobile phone and ask people from around the campus to text in with their preferred toasty, a question about Christianity, and where they want their toasty in question delivered to. So I went with a friend of mine to someone's flat, wandered in with the toasty, found the people, they were all sitting in the kitchen. Funnily enough, another group from the text the toasty thing were already there. And so we sat down, they were in the middle of a conversation already. And sort of, it was just really casual. We were just chatting about courses, chatting about sort of what they'd done to get to university because they were all freshers. And it was just a really, really easy way in. And then we sort of started dealing with their questions and the conversation just naturally flowed from sort of the starting point to a lot of other questions that they had about Christianity. It was just really great. And we sort of ended it all by explaining the gospel. Now, none of them sort of committed then and there, but we'd gone out and sort of we'd had a really great time sharing all this stuff. And in fact, they'd had a great time receiving it, which is really, really amazing. And in fact, this Saturday just gone, as some of you know, I was out in London with some secondary school friends of mine. And we were just casually hanging out and talking. And sort of out of nowhere, because I mentioned that I'm doing the thing that I'm doing next year, they started asking me questions about God and Jesus and about prayer. And it's kind of like, wow, like that came out of nowhere. And it gave me an awesome chance to just really share a bit about how prayer works and why we as Christians believe it does what it does, which was amazing. However, it's not all about models and opportunities to share the gospel. Actually, you know, the words we speak and share have to impact the entirety of our lives, not just those magic moments where we sort of get the opportunity to share the gospel with someone. We've spoken in the maturity session, the accountability session, regarding the power that words have. And in fact, they can knock people down as easily as they can build them up, if not easier. So we really need to be careful about the words we choose, the way we say the words, and in fact, why we're saying the words at all. I mean, you guys can all detect the difference in how I say, that is brilliant, compared to, that is brilliant. Right? The first one is obviously a lot more edifying, a lot more builder-uppy. But if I'm going around being really sarcastic about something that you come and show me, you know, you're not going to feel edified, you're not going to feel built up, you're going to feel, you know, pretty rubbish, because I'm not taking it seriously, I'm knocking you down, aren't I? I'm being deliberately disparaging. And again, if we're saying things that actually you know, we're just saying to make ourselves feel good. We're really not living in the loving spirit that Jesus wants us to. So why on earth are we saying these things at all? We're not actually living effectively for Christ, which is what this whole series of talks is about. Now, secondly, we're going to move on to actions now. The way we act in front of people has a huge impact on the way they view us and on the message we share with them. So authenticity is something that's become a bit of a buzzword. Nick, can we flash up the next one? Bam. Authenticity has become a bit of a buzzword at the moment. As you can tell from my picture, I've gone for the hashtag no filter thing, which has become a bit of a trend on Buzzword. A buzzword? It's become a bit of a trend on Instagram, which is really interesting. It's kind of like, why is suddenly a program with all these filter options, all these amazing ways to sort of show your photos off, and people are actually deliberately choosing not to use any of the techniques they give them? It's because people are craving authenticity. In fact, we see this all over the world at the moment in terms of sort of the glossy magazines getting a lot of stick for airbrushing photos of celebrities and all that kind of stuff. The world is literally crying out for people to be real, being authentic. 1 Peter tells us that we are to live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. Peter there is encouraging us to live really authentic lives. I mean, how radical is that last bit of the verse? That pagans will see our good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. That's literally saying that people who don't even believe in God will glorify him. That's madness, isn't it? They're glorifying something they don't think exists. That's really radical. But the point Peter's making is that this has to be a sustained thing. This isn't a single action. This isn't a one-off. We need to be living good lives consistently. It's not something we switch on and switch off again. And in fact, you know, it's good deeds he's talking about here. It's going out and doing little things that bless people. So it could be as simple as lending someone a pen in school when they've forgotten something. It could be taking the rubbish out for your parents at home. This stuff is really little, really simple, but it blesses a heck of a lot of people. And sometimes you don't even realize it. And in fact, as Peter says, there will be times we get it wrong and people call us out on it. These can be non-Christians as well as Christians. And I'm sure you guys have been called out by your parents and so you haven't done something that they've asked you to do. And you've just made it really annoying for them. I know I have. I mean, I've gotten a lot better at it since I've become a Christian. I've become more patient. I've become better at doing chores around the house and trying to bless them. But there are still times where I mess up. I mean, my room is perpetually a mess. And usually when we have people coming over to stay, because I've got a double bed in my room, they'll kick me out and use that to let people stay in it. And so if I haven't cleaned up the room and time's running short, Mum and Dad will have to go in and sort it out. And I'll be like, oh, Sam, why haven't you cleaned your room up? We told you ages ago to go and sort it out. I'll be like, sorry. And if we're being authentic, we've got to take it on the chin and say, actually, yeah, I goofed, I messed up. But the important thing is to keep going, keep trying. Because with Jesus, we've got unlimited second chances. So when we fall off the horse, we immediately get back up and sit on the saddle again. So that's a really, really general application, isn't it? That's saying for the whole of our lives, we've got to try and do good deeds because it blesses people. But actually, there are some really, really specific instances that require specific actions on our part. And more often than not, these are meeting the needs of others when they crop up. James tells us, suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? He's pretty blunt here, isn't he? He doesn't mince his words. And actually, if we're really going to make an impact, then we need to be prepared to meet people's needs. That means we have to put ourselves out there, and in fact, that costs us something. That costs us something physical. It may even cost us some time as well. And if you guys can remember back to the general election, I'm not sure how sort of up to date you were with everything that was going on, but there was a lot of talk about food banks, wasn't there, leading up to it? And in fact, there still is now. I think there's a record usage of food banks in this country at the moment. And in fact, the main supplier of all these food banks is the church. This is something that we've done really, really well. And in fact, secular society is picking up on this and actually saying, well done, you stepped into a gap that we sorely needed filling. Thank you for that. So it's linking back to that verse in Peter. The pagans are actually glorifying you and saying, yes, you're doing good. Thank you. Thank you. But actually, there are often charities and other organizations who have sort of stepped up to the mark to meet people's needs. There are loads of charities and examples. So we could look at Oxfam doing stuff in Africa. We could look at Tear Fund as well. And in fact, we have an example sitting in our midst. We've got Lucy in A21, haven't we? So Lucy came up and shared last week about sort of seeing that news report and sort of feeling really quite affected by what it's sharing about how there was that bottle burst near Gatwick. And she felt as if she had to go and do something. She had to raise awareness. And so she found this organization. She'd been following it for a while, but felt, yeah, I'm going to get involved. And they provided a platform for her to do that, which is amazing. That's good. And we want to encourage all of you, if you've got an issue that you feel strongly about, to find a charity or find another organization that will enable you to engage with that issue. We want to support you. We want you to actually go out and sort of deal with the needs and the problems that are in the world. And in fact, we also want to say that if you notice an issue that, you know, there isn't an organization dealing with, or maybe the organization that potentially could deal with it is just too big, too clunky to work at a local level, we're behind you as the church. We're saying, hey, if you want to do something about this, you've got our backing. We're here with you to support you and help you do it. But that goes both ways. If someone comes to us and says, hey, there's this really important issue going on, whether that is feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, or anything like that, it means we have to be prepared to actually get behind them and support them, whether that means giving our time in terms of serving at a soup kitchen or whatever, or whether that means actually giving our financial resources over. Sometimes it's costly, and I know you guys don't have a lot of money, but I mean, if we think back to Mark's talk on Sunday, for those of you who are there, he was talking about how we need to sort of use our resources sensibly. We shouldn't be self-interested with our resources, because in fact, they're all a gift from God. So we need to think about how we use them wisely. Even a little can make a huge difference. But in fact, I'm not saying that you have to run, walk, or swim if you want to get involved in something like that. There are numerous other ways to raise awareness of issues. For something local, you can write to your MP. Even on a country scale, you could write to an MP and ask them to take up an issue. Or there are all loads of online petitions, aren't there? You must have seen them doing the rounds on the internet, various posts on Facebook. And in fact, there is one story that you may remember from last year about a woman called Miriam Ibrahim, who was sentenced to death in Sudan for not recanting her Christian beliefs. She was pregnant with a child at the time because it was an Islamic country, and she'd married a Christian, which is a crime. It's called apostasy. The sentence is death. Then this hit mainstream media. This garnered lots of attention. There was a huge petition set up online. Over 122,000 people signed it. She's now safely in the US, building a new life in New Hampshire. But because of the impact of that petition and sort of the effect that had on the media, there was a real change. So we want to encourage you that actually, while you may notice these things and you feel alone, you feel powerless, that actually you've got a lot of power, and your actions, if you're living it out properly, will inspire people around you to get involved, to really make a difference. Cool. Dun, dun, dun. Now, I've spent a lot of time speaking about actions and words separately, haven't I? But when we're really connecting with people, they rarely look at them in isolation. James says, "You foolish person, do you want evidence that faith without deeds is useless? Was not our father Abraham considered righteous for what he did when he offered his son Isaac on the altar? You see that his faith and his actions were working together, and his faith was made complete by what he did." Obviously, it's not quite literal here, but the point is that faith is something we usually profess, isn't it? And to profess something, we normally need words. So if we're going to sort of practice what we preach and not be hypocrites, Jesus spends an entire chapter of Matthew calling out the Pharisees as hypocrites. We need to line our actions and our words up it's a real sign of living effectively for Jesus, because if we're not living the complete package, we're not the whole deal, then actually people aren't going to take you seriously. They're just going to ignore you. And in fact, in a world that's crying out for authenticity, people who are saying things and not backing them up, people are going to ignore you. People aren't going to take you seriously in the small things as well as the big ones, which means the gospel's pretty much off the table before you start. And this is a huge challenge, and I don't expect you to get it right every day. I get it wrong far more often than I get it right. But we're not called to do this on our own. Actually, the Holy Spirit gives us so much that we can do this. He gives us the words to say when we're in situations. And in fact, he convicts us of the things we need to do and the things we shouldn't be doing as well. It's when we're trying to emulate Christ, of course. So obviously, sometimes we'd like to ignore him. We'd like to put him to the back of our mind. But if we're really opening ourselves up to him and what he wants to share with us, then we'll know what's right and what's wrong. And in fact, I just want to encourage you guys that when we really do live these things out, when we combine our actions and our faith together, I mean, actions and faith, when we combine our actions and words and match them up, God really does present us with amazing opportunities to share the gospel. And we all have relationships with family and friends that we can use, that we can share the gospel through. And in fact, these are often the most powerful ones, because actually, they know what you were like before you started applying this. They know what you're like after as well. In fact, we have a great example that happened just recently in the Cube. So one of the guys popped in who used to go to the Ice Cube, which was the drop-in center we had around there. And he turned up and told us that he'd become a Christian. Needless to say, we were really excited and a little bit confused because, you know, we didn't quite know how it happened. So we're like, okay, how did this happen? What happened? And it turned out that he plays for a football team. And so he'd been playing a match for his team, and one of his friends was also playing, and he noticed that this guy had stopped swearing, this guy had stopped getting angry at the ref, stopped kicking the ball away in anger. And he was just like, this is weird. This hasn't happened before. What's going on? And so they finished the game, and afterwards he went up and spoke to him. He was like, mate, what's going on? You don't do that normally. What's happened? And his friend was like, mate, I've become a Christian. And he was like, what? And so they had a little conversation, and the impact that that had on him eventually led him to become a Christian himself. Take heart, guys. Take real encouragement that actually if you sort of put the two together, people notice. And in fact, it's amazing just to think how many opportunities you have and could have when sort of people see you living authentically for Jesus. And I know that sometimes it's really hard. Sometimes it feels like no one cares, no one notices. I feel that. I get it. With my friends all the time, it's kind of like, do you not see how different I am? Can you not? No, you're not picking. Okay. But actually, anytime someone does notice the smallest change, the thing where, oh, you're not swearing, or, huh, why don't you talk about that kind of thing with us anymore? Or, why aren't you gossiping? What's going on? Why aren't you sharing it? That actually, it's a little victory because we're living the way that God wants. And that little victory means that they've had a little glimpse as to who Jesus is. That's really exciting because their heart will start to soften and they'll start to see other things. So be really encouraged, guys, and sort of grab the challenge with both hands because it makes a real difference. Okay.